You are listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast. Welcome to this episode of Kapiti Poets, funded by the Creative Community Scheme via Kapiti Coast District Council, by the New Zealand Poetry Society, and by generous donors via the boosted crowdfunding platform. I'm your host, Ingrid Prosser, performance poet from Paraparaumu, and I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio today Kirsten Le Harivel, who lives in Waikanae. I've come to know Kirsten through her support of other writers, specifically through her creation and organisation of Kapiti's new book festival, Bookmark Kapiti, which was inaugurated last year, 2025. We'll talk about that later in the programme. It's the latest in a long line of activities undertaken by Kirsten to support others, including the programming of creative writing courses. In the midst of it all, she does find time to be a poet herself, with performances and a candid and very interesting book published. Thank you for coming in to share with us, Kirsten. I'm really looking forward to our exploration.
Thanks for having me, Ingrid.
You're most welcome. So, will you tell us how your poetic journey began? Were you writing in childhood or did it begin later?
I do remember writing as a child. I distinctly remember at the screen of a computer when I was a child and a poem on there, but then I don't remember touching poetry until I was probably in my mid-late 20s and travelling overseas and needing a way to process that experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then when I came back, I sort of delved into formal education and did some courses at Whitire and did the MA at Vic, and then that sort of set me off on the journey.
Great. So were you doing other creative things in childhood?
I always liked art, like drawing, and I was a very passionate environmentalist when I was quite young. So I used to write a lot about animals and that kind of thing. And I've always loved reading. Like, reading is like my happy place.
Yes, yes. Were you reading poetry?
Not really. I still am. I'm a fiction reader. Like, it's escapism for me probably more than it is intellectual. But when I'm writing, I read more, but it's more to do with the practice than it is like the entertainment, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I understand that. Great. Right. Well, we're going to talk in a little while about your book, and I'd love to have you share a poem with us now, which is about your childhood, and it's in your book. So I think this is an excellent time to have that. So if you want to say anything else about it, or just go straight into reading the poem.
The kernel of this poem was we had to draw a floor map. It was such an interesting creative writing exercise of our childhood home.
Oh, yeah.
And I could so distinctively remember my childhood home.
Yes.
And then this just flowed out of that.
Brilliant.
From
Brilliant.
That very visceral memory that you have when you're a child of a place. So I'll just start now. It's called A Ouija Lass. I walk home from school past the lollipop lady and on until I reach the library. As I wait for the crossing to go green, I shuffle my feet. Pee-pee trickles down into my ankle socks. The light turns and I run. My sister and I wait outside the front door watching the cars stream past. Dad has forgotten about us and our tummies rumble. Our neighbour with the barking Alsatian feeds us tinned tomato soup and chips. We don't miss him then. At the chippy, everything comes wrapped in black and white. We eat chips, vinegar soggy with lots of mayonnaise. After swimming, squishy lumps of potato come wedged between slices of buttered bread. Laura comes to visit and we go to the field. We call it a field, but it is really a series of red grit playing fields bordered by grass and small hillocks. She falls over and her pink tracksuit pants get covered in dog poo. Dad's office is wedged under an overpass. It is a warren of drawing tables, piles of paper, and high-backed chairs. When we are waiting for him to finish work, we colour the city skyline of an architect's Where's Wally? I get sent to school when I'm sick. I manage to hold on till morning break, but the gold-wrapped penguin biscuit is too much. I want to tell the teacher I'm feeling poorly, Instead, the evidence lies all over the floor and the heel of the navy shoes she's wearing for the staff lunch. Our school does the nativity play every year. Once I am an angel. The girl who is a Jehovah's Witness has to sit in the corridor. Her parents say she isn't allowed to watch. Each year we perform the work of Robbie Burns. One of my classmates says she is related to the Scottish bird. The teacher dismisses the connection because, well, it isn't that unique to be related to him. The teachers tell us to beware of flashes, men with plastic raincoats who might show us their bits in the streets around school. We walk home from Battlefield Primary every day and nothing happens. For 1 hour, the living room is full of the thunk of chickpeas hitting the metal bowl. I count one for each vehicle that goes past. Each pea marks a pence. Mum collects the pounds from her workmates, and I get a letter from Greenpeace. Our teacher holds up a picture of a balsa wood raft. Tears run down her cheeks as she tells us about Thor Heyerdahl's attempt to prove the Pacific was settled from east to west. Like the raft, his hypothesis was flimsy. Past the fields, the conkers, and the place where the man asked my sister to put a balloon on him, the train takes me to high school and Princess Square with its fine balustrades and wishing well.
Well, thank you very much. I love that poem. It's got so much in it and it makes me laugh. Oh, it's a wonderful collection. It makes me think, what would I write if I were to write a poem like that, collecting various elements from my childhood? Yeah, it's quite an inspiring idea to do that. So thank you for that. Your book, Shelter, was published in 2021 by the Cuba Press. It shows you to be very well travelled. And I love your honesty. At times the poems are quite emotionally raw and sort of unflinching. I admire that.
Thank you.
The book came out a few years ago now. Is it still available to purchase?
Yep, yes it is.
That's great. In all the shops.
I don't know where it is. It is at Toi Mahara at the gallery, if you want to get it from nearby, Coast Access Radio.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes. So it contains poems from a number of years.
Yeah.
Yes. So you collected them all up. And maybe did you write some of them specially for that book to maybe tie things together?
No, not really. I wrote most of them during the MA year.
Yes.
But with Mary McCallum, who's the publisher at the Cuba Press, we took out loads of them. We put new ones in that I'd written since then. So it was more, the work was, to be honest, much more in the organisation than it was in the actual poems. I had most of the work already, but it was making it fit together that was the challenge and the bit that we really spent a lot of time on.
Yes, yes. One does need to do that, I think. Yes, I've certainly done that with my books. And sometimes if I have a book with three cycles, so that's quite easy.
Mm.
But when you've got a whole lot of disparate poems, but that's one of the joys of putting a book together, I think. It's certainly something I really enjoy.
I find it really difficult, I have to say. It's not my favourite part of the process. I like the editing, but I find it very difficult to work out how to put them together. I've tried so many ways.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Whether it was, you know, chronological or by location or thematic. And yeah, I found that was quite difficult.
Yes. Interesting. So you obviously didn't go with chronological exactly, because the poem that I'd like to hear from you next in a little while is actually later than the one that you've just read, but it's earlier in the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So maybe we'll find out a bit more as we go on about reasons for putting things in certain orders. Well, a theme running through this series of Capity Poets is the consideration of what makes a poem a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to consider this today via the formatting of poems, with particular reference to prose poems. You have a dozen prose poems in your book. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us what a prose poem is and why they appeal to you?
To me, a prose poem is a poem without line breaks, essentially. And you, some people would call it flash fiction. Some you could call it a short story, depending how long it is. To be honest, I'm not super bothered about the terminology.
Yeah.
But I feel like, depending on what it is that you're talking to, it works better as a form. Like, there's a poem in here called "It Runs Through Trees," which is about water.
Yeah.
And it's a list poem.
Yeah.
And so having it as a big block, I think, helps with the sense of what it's about and the flow and the kind of build up of the imagery as it goes along. But I also find if what I'm writing has a bit more of a narrative, like a traditional narrative, like a traditional story,
yeah,
then that kind of prose format works well for conveying that.
Yes, I've been thinking about it a lot over the last couple of days, and I've never really read very many prose poems in the past. I've sort of hadn't really taken in the idea of them. And maybe in books previously, I've passed over them. Just couldn't connect with the idea of them somehow. And I decided in the end that the most important thing about a layout of a poem is conveying the sense of it. You want to convey the sense to the reader. Clearly, it's certainly my aim to do that. And if you can do that more easily in a form that doesn't have any line breaks and just appears like a paragraph from any book, then why not?
Indeed. Indeed. I mean, it's not arbitrary. I think people look at them and think they're arbitrary, but I quite often think about how big it should be. Like, the margin is quite important to me. So some of them go all the way to the edge and some don't.
Oh, nice.
So I definitely think about where the ending is. Like, that's important to me. And then visually it's important what it actually looks like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I will go back and study yours with a closer interest now, just to see how far across the page that they go. Yeah, and it's an interesting point about length, isn't it? I read Oscar Wilde's prose poems. I think he just wrote six of them, I think. And most of them are quite short, but one of them goes on. It's quite long. Mm. And I think they were originally oral tales, which he wrote down in, and the book was, I can't remember the title of the book, but it's something about prose poems. And yes, as I said, one of them was definitely more of a short story. Yeah, so that's a very interesting point in terms of what makes a poem a poem. Sometimes a poem is very obviously a poem in terms of the way it looks, because we've seen so many poems looking like that. But at other times, it doesn't have to look in that traditional sense like a poem.
Yeah. And I guess it depends whether you're writing like for the page or whether you're writing for it to be read.
Yes.
Out loud, you know, as an oral poem, because that's, you know, if you think of that more conceptual poetry, the layout is quite critical. And actually, if you were trying to read some of them, it's really hard to know how to read them, because maybe they've got three columns and they jump around. And because they're written with a sort of different aesthetic in mind and from a different purpose, I guess, or perspective. Then if you were writing it to read, you'd probably make more emphasis on the line breaks in a way, because that helps you with reading it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. If you're performing it, then all you have to do as the performer is make it work for the audience, and you do the work beforehand too. If it's your own poem, obviously that's relatively easy. If you're performing somebody else's poem, you might have to work at it harder, but you're going to make it work for the listeners.
Yeah.
Great. Well, let's hear another of your poems now, which is not a prose poem. Will you tell us something about it?
Sure. So this poem I wrote about when we came to Aotearoa. So we moved from central city Glasgow, which is where a lot of that last poem is set in Scotland, to rural Palmerston North. Yep, interesting parental choice. But anyway, so this is that poem. When we came here, I didn't know how to sleep in the silence of Aukotere. The hush of darkness was something I didn't know how to touch. My childhood had been a swath of people. They didn't feature in our photo albums or come round for tea. Instead, they made a clatter, rumble, shuttle, rush just outside the window.
Yes, thank you. I really get a great sense of the difference there. So why, yes, interesting parental choice, you said. Any idea why? What was the decision making?
Both of my parents are trained as architects, so they both haven't always worked as architects. And they were interested in sustainability and they wanted to build their own place. And I think they got sucked into the greenwash that is the New Zealand propaganda machine about, you know, what how clean and green New Zealand was and how kind of into that sort of stuff it was.
Yeah.
And so they thought, let's move over there and get involved in that. But unfortunately, the perception was different from the reality in terms of how much, and particularly in the architectural sense, that people had were actually doing in that space.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's interesting. Yes, one of those occasions when obviously I think at a deeper level, a change is appropriate. It's the right time for a change. And even if it doesn't work out quite the way that you planned, it's still appropriate, I think, on a deeper level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't think there's any regrets, but it just was that was the driver, was that sort of wanting to be part of that. But it was a bit different from what we sort of anticipated.
Yes. So did you come to the Kapiti Coast with your family or was that later?
Yes, after Palmerston North we moved here because Mum used to work in Wellington.
Ah, right. Yeah. So you completed your growing up on the Kapiti Coast then? Right. And you live in Waikanae and have you lived in Waikanae on the coast or have you lived in other areas as well?
Since I have come back, I've mostly lived in Waikanae, yeah. I didn't really plan to come back, but here we are.
Yes, look, of course you did a lot of travelling. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, so that must have been a pretty amazing time living in India. And of course there are poems about that time in your book, which I've been very interested to read. And I found another one online as well, which I thought, why isn't that in the book? I really like that one.
Which one was that one?
It was At the Crossroads.
Yeah, I wrote that one a long time ago, but it wasn't quite finished or it didn't fit when we put the book together.
Yes.
Yeah, I did want it in there, but it didn't get in.
Oh, well, I'm glad that I found it. And it's on a website, if anyone wanted to look it up, called radiuslit.org, RADIUSLIT.org. So can you tell us something about how living on the Kapiti Coast has influenced your writing?
I guess I haven't set out explicitly to write about Kapiti or being here, but I think anywhere that you live infiltrates your poems. I mean, there are some poems in the book that are set here, but they're potentially not explicitly set here. But I do notice the beach and other things pop up more than they probably would if I lived in, you know, central Otago or whatever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I understand that. Until we came to live in the Wellington region, I'd only ever, well, I suppose I did live in Auckland years ago and worked in the city centre, so I suppose it was fairly near the water. But going to the beach, walking on the beach, that was a holiday thing. And now it's become so much a part of life that, yes, the sea comes into my poems a lot as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, let's have another poem from the book now, and will you tell us a little bit about it?
I don't know how much to say without giving it away. I think this is part of many poems in here about the challenges of relationships, shall we say. So I'll just read it. If only it was that easy. In the beginning, the liminal is beautiful. We have the cold, the rush, our smudged edges. We drink difference like diabetics on a sugar rush. There is the dark night, the quiet moon, our undies beaming. We whisper that we can build a bridge, fashion a net. Our fingerprints are touching. construction begins. We make a new road from existing materials, turn bread into toast. I like jam and you like peanut butter. Eventually this becomes an insurmountable problem and production stops. You still want to run your chalky digit along my calves. I think it will cost me the shape of my bones.
Yes, I like this poem very much. I love the extended metaphor, and one can't help smiling at the beaming undies. Yeah, so I like the way that you've made something that's quite complex seem sort of simpler, which works as a way to consider it, doesn't it? It's, yes. And then your last sentence is quite frightening, really, because suddenly there's a deeper element of seriousness. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's very brave to put all these poems about relationships and challenges in your book. And so they're spread around a bit, aren't they? I guess you wouldn't want them as a chunk. That must have been part of the consideration of the order that the poems were going to go in.
I don't think I ever thought of putting them all together. Yeah, in part because it would be a bit much, but also partly because they're more interesting in relation to the sort of time and space that they exist in, probably, mm-hmm. rather than as a concept.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, great. Well, we must talk about the Bokmark Kapiti Festival.
Sure.
I am really, really delighted that you have created this event. It's great. And last year I thoroughly enjoyed attending events and also hosting the open mic event in Paikakariki. Thank you again for that opportunity. It was really super. And we had the author alley, which mm-hmm. was a day-long book market.
Yeah,
Kapiti Poets had a stall representing a number of us with books, etc., to sell. And it was a wonderful opportunity to meet people and to perform some of our poetry too. You've decided to make the main festival biennial rather than yearly.
Mm-hmm.
But the book market, with a new name, will take place every year. So will you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure.
The upcoming one.
Yep. So Author Alley was great. We got really great responses from the people who attended and, you know, from all the stallholders. And so we thought, let's build on this and make it a standalone activity that can be offered every year and then keep the festival to be biennial and, you know, a bit more focused probably on talks and those other kinds of activities. And so this year, we've renamed it to be the Bookish Book Market. It's a little bit of a tongue twister, but Kieran came up with that one. But basically to bring in more stalls, more opportunities to engage with writers and with their work, and more performance, music, other creatives that are associated with the book industry. So really making it into a fun day out, having activities for children as well, so that it can become an event for everybody to come and just celebrate books and reading and talking about books and everything in that kind of lane.
That's great. That's great. Especially as so often with events that are focused on buying and selling, that doesn't always work for people. So having something that's much more of a sharing occasion, and then if somebody's able to and wants to buy, that's fine. Obviously, we go there, we have a store and we like to sell things, but it's just as great to talk with people and do some performing as well. And so I know that I'm really looking forward to that.
Awesome. Yes. And we are looking for more stallholders. So if people are interested in having a stall, they should get in touch. Have a look on our website, bookmarkkapiti.nz, for more info, with 1K.
Yes, with 1K, yes. Bookmarkkapiti, what was the next
one? .nz.
.nz, bookmarkkapiti.nz, and just the 1K in the
middle.
In the middle, that's right. Thank you so much for coming in to share with us, Kirsten. It's been really great. In a moment, we'll finish the programme with one more poem. First, I'd like once more to say thank you very, very much to our generous and supportive funders, the Kapiti Coast District Council for the Creative Community Scheme funding which comes from Creative New Zealand, the New Zealand Poetry Society, and individuals via the boosted crowdfunding platform. Tell us about the poem we're going to hear now.
I think this one doesn't have a huge backstory, to be honest. So I think I'd probably just like to read it, if that's all right,
yes.
And let people take what they will from it.
Can I just ask, is that the Kapiti Coast, or is it somewhere else? Or is it just an amalgam of everywhere?
It's not set in a specific place, no.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I really wanted to know that, so thank you.
It's called Night Swimming. The sky is roomy as a piece of glass. She ticks in trans-Pacific time. The sky hangs heavy like lightning on contact. She wears peacock blue and her eyes are matching. The sky is clapping and bells clanging. She listens with one ear. The sky sleeps in feathers. She is an empty breath.
You have been listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast.
This programme was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio with support from New Zealand On Air.